Mizmar Lamed Aleph. Mizmar Lamed Aleph. I'm going to try to do this very quickly. Okay, I want to run through this very quickly so we go to Mizmar Lamed Aleph very soon. Mizmar Lamed Aleph, according to Moses, it's a long Mizmar. It's a long, not that long, but it's whatever. It's nice Mizmar. And it's not very common. We don't really read this Mizmar too, unless you say the whole Tehillim. This Mizmar, I'm not aware, appears in davening. I'm not aware that this Mizmar is used something as a Shir Shal Yom for any special day. This Mizmar, for some reason, is under the radar. Okay, you know, everything, HaKol B'mazel Tal Yenulsa. Afilu Sefer Torah Shabbeheichel. Why did certain Mizmarim get prominence when they were included in the Nusach HaTfilah, or they were used for certain events? The truth is, every single Mizmar has Yisoides. Once you select the Mizmar becomes part of the routine. You can look at it backwards and you can discover many important Yisoides, and we'll explain, yeah, it makes a lot of sense why we actually use this Mizmar. But for some reason, Mizmar Lamed Aleph did not, it's not as popular as the other Mizmarim.
It's a negative, it's an abad negative.
Oh, there's a nigun. So someone came along and tried to give it some life by making a nigun out of it. What? Okay, we have a new star is born. The new Shweki, Rabbi Eliezer Liedenfriend. The Oilam is going to have to learn to pronounce your name, though. It's not going to be so easy, you know, for the Oilam to learn to pronounce your name.
You can all be jealous,
it's okay. The first question you always ask is, who composed the Mizmar? What was it composed concerning? So basically, everyone on the page says the same thing. They all basically say that it was composed by David. It was composed when David fled from Shaul. When, in the beginning of his Malchus, when the story of Ziph, okay, the Maisa of Ziph. Now, really, we should really go through the Pesukim, but unfortunately, we don't have here in front of all of us a Shmuel, so it's not so practical for us at this moment to go through the whole background. Maybe we should really do that one day. They do have over here, right? The shul has some shmuels. You know, I know the shul does have a certain spot. That would be actually a great idea to do that.
We should get some very cheap.
Inexpensive. Nothing is cheap. Maybe we should do that. That way, when we do a Mizmar, when we come to a Mizmar like this, we'll be able to go through the background and say for Shmuel what it's referring to. That'll be a very good idea. Okay, I don't see on the show. I see the Yeshua Shaiftim. I don't see. Maybe we have to find if I can get some Sefer Shmuels, because that'll be very, very appropriate. Okay, something to work on today. Any event, the Malm over here presents more of a little bit of a background. Let's look over here at the Malm. Okay, look at the Malm over here. Pasuk Aleph. There's really more that needs to be added to the background, but we'll just read a little bit. Pasuk Aleph in the Malm, it's on page 264. Pasuk Aleph on the bottom. You know, where it says, Tfilas David l'hamalbum, Be'or hu'inyin, Pasuk Aleph l'hamatzeach. Hamizmar hazeh husad was established al ma sha al yidei nevuas God sheyoshuv le'eretz Yehuda. David fled. It's a very complicated story. David ran away from Eretz Yisrael. He went to the land of the Plishtim. Now the Plishtim is part of Eretz Yisrael. The whole land is Eretz Yisrael. Just there are certain sections that were not yet conquered, and the Plishtim were occupiers. They were still living in Eretz Yisrael. So, of course, it's part of Eretz Yisrael, but it's not part of the land where it's safe. It's not a good neighborhood. The Plishtim are there, and they're deadly. David was between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, to walk the streets in Yerushalayim, or to walk the streets, there was no Yerushalayim then at that point, but to walk the streets in the safe parts of Eretz Yisrael, he would be apprehended and he would be killed, because Shaul labeled him as a Moired B'Malchus, and Shaul wanted him dead for no good reason. Okay, Shaul was overtaken. Was overtaken by by some type of ruach ra. It was illogical that what he wanted to do to David, but nevertheless, David was running for his life. So David could not remain in a safe neighborhood. So where would David go? David would go to the Pelishtim, to the other parts of Eretz Yisrael that are not under the control of the Malchus of Klal Yisrael.
He was in Moab, wasn't
he? He went to that at one point. That was a different story. That was a different story. But that didn't go too well either. Going to Moab didn't go to want. They wanted to kill him there also. They found out who he was. He had a feigned insanity. He had to make believe that he was a Meshugana. Chasam Meshugoy Mani. David had a very rough life wherever he went. So what did David do? So he went to the place of the Pelishtim, which part of the Pelishtim, a region called Ziph. So he was hiding there. And then who shows up on his front door? God HaChoizeh. God HaChoizeh, one of the two major prominent spiritual leaders of David in his life. Nasan HaNavi and God HaChoizeh. Why was one called one, the other another? The other one was called the Choizeh, and Nasan was the Navi, I don't know. Obviously, there are different expressions for prophecy, and each one had a different role. These two people were very prominent advisors, or I don't know, advisors, but they were very prominent connections between David and Hashem. Even though David himself was a prophet, there's no question about that. Yet David, a prophet, also needs a prophet. Every non-profit organization needs to file taxes with a prophet organization. Right? Okay, there's always a legal loophole somewhere, right? So every prophet needs the prophet. Every prophet is a very interesting concept, but that even a Navi needs a Navi. A Rebbe needs a Rebbe. A Rebbe needs a Rebbe. Who's the Rebbe's Rebbe? And who's the Rebbe of the Rebbe's Rebbe? Everyone in this world needs a Rebbe.
It all goes back to Hashem?
Obviously. Correct. It all goes back to Hashem. So Nasan, even though he was a Navi, he was a Melech, David is everything. Yet David had two very powerful, significant people in his life that he looked to give him instructions from Hashem. Ein chovush matir atzma yidei su'asur. A person cannot help himself. Every person needs someone else to shake him up, to guide him, give him advice. And who are these people? Nasan HaNavi and God HaChoizeh. Each one served a very different role. And to understand that, we have to learn Sefer Shmuel. But then even over here in this situation, David, in the beginning of his Malchus, after he was anointed by Shmuel, Shaul found out what happened, that David had been anointed, and Shaul did not like what was going on, and he felt it was illegal. To Shalakid in, and he went to, and he put him on a hit list, on a kill list, to go to David. So David had no choice but to flee. Where did he flee? To the Pelishtim. The Pelishtim, so he's there, who comes to him? God HaChoizeh. God, how did you know where I'm hiding? GPS tracker. If God HaChoizeh is able to communicate with Hashem, God HaChoizeh knows where you're hiding. And God HaChoizeh tells him, it's time for you to return. It's time for you to come back to Eretz Yehuda. Don't be afraid of Shaul. The Malbim says, a little background, HaMizmar Zeh, who said HaMashal Al-Yidei Nebuas God, Sheyoshev L'Eretz Yehuda, he should return. The Al-Yidei Teshuvas Ha'urim V'Tumim. Furthermore, he went and he asked a question from the Urim V'Tumim what to do. Sheyelech L'Ki'ila, L'Hishia Es Yisrael Miyad Polishtim, Niskar, and then when he did return, okay, I don't know the details. It's been a long time since I learned Shmuel. I forgot everything I know. And unfortunately, I didn't prepare well. And then when he went back, he went to Ke'ilah to save. He was then told on his way back that there are Jews that have been held captive in this city called Ke'ilah. And he went to save them. Niskar b'Ke'ilah, he was captured. And then the Oz Rodaf Shaul Acharav, when he was captured, word went out that David is captured, and who got word? Shaul and his men. So they went together. V'Hashem hodiyoy al yidei hu'udim v'tumim she'ba'alei ki'ilo lo ya'amdu be'emunasam v'yaskiru b'yad shol. There's a lot of conspiracy going on. A lot of intrigue taking place here. David needs to trust someone. David was told by God HaKhoizah to go, and then he took a detour. Only took a detour, he came to the people of Ki'ila, and he made a deal with them. There's many more details that unfortunately I didn't prepare well. And David had to put his trust in the people of Ki'ila that they would not deliver him to the hands of Shaul. And the Urim, the Tumim, communicated with David and told him, don't trust the people of Ki'ila, they're going to give you over. So therefore, V'yatza Mishab, he left. Where did he go? V'yosha B'midbar B'mitzadois. And he dwelt in the desert, in the midst of the, the Mitsudois David, the fortress of David. He dwelt in the desert, and it seems there was some type of fortress. There was some type of protective area in the Midbar. The Yasha Midbar Zif, which Midbar? Midbar Zif. Umisham Olu Hazifim, and then when the Zifim found out that David was there, Vayiragiluhu El Shol, they also snitched and told Shol that his David's over here. He's with us. They also snitched. GPS coordinates. He was gone by that time. The Shalvan Mashav Oitrim is David. They almost got him. They surrounded him. The Hashem Hitzilom Miyodo and Hashem saved him. He narrowly escaped. Shaul was distracted. It was a distraction of Shaul had that allowed David to slip out. So basically, in a nutshell, David's on the run. Wherever he goes, he doesn't know who to trust. Okay, the people of Ki'ila, life is all about trust. You know, that's really the end of the day. End of the day is you have to trust someone. Everything you do in life. Like I was listening to someone talk about a very controversial topic. The vaccine. So this person said, you know, I don't know. I can say the same thing for myself and probably most people. How many people in this world understand the science behind the vaccine? And the guy said, maybe one in every 300,000 people understand exactly the science.
Only one guy understands it.
He doesn't understand it. Who's he understands it? He's not. Who's this? You know, I don't know. How many people do you know you can go to right now and say, please explain to me? We'll sit down for a couple of hours. You explain to me exactly how this works. They always tell you to trust the science. So in the world, this fellow said he thinks that he made an estimate. He thinks about one in 300,000 people can sit down with you and explain to you exactly the way it works. But most people that we know, I don't know these people. I don't know. My doctors, people that I know, they don't know anything. They know what they're supposed to know. They know you do ABC. If you have this, they're very well trained and they have a lot of experience, but they're not scientists. They're not that old. So at the end of the day, the whole world took the vaccine. I mean, not the whole world, but a nice chunk of the world took it. Why? Trust. Yeah. I believe you. I trust you. Who do you trust? The unknown. Who are the people you trust? Everything in life, things that you do in life, it's either you know firsthand or you have trust. Someone you have to believe in someone. Trust. So this fellow is saying, I don't even know who these people are. And from watching the news, I've lost trust. Am I guilty? Am I to be held accountable, guilty for being irresponsible? Because I don't trust someone. I don't trust someone that I don't know. In the eyes of the world, he is. In the eyes of the world, at least what is presented to us is that you're an avarian if you don't do what everyone else is doing. And he's saying, why am I such a bad guy? At the end of the day, you have to trust someone. Trust, emunah. And I don't know anyone that can explain this to me. I don't know any of these 1 in 300,000 people. And the people that I see on television, you know, there's something wrong. So I don't trust. Why am I a criminal for not trusting? And you know, it's a scary thing. There's a lot of, you know, there are things that you could know that people that we do know, people on their own, or there are enough people out there who do know, who you do trust. And if they explain, you know these people, there are enough people out there, you do trust them. A doctor, you trust your doctor. Your doctor really does know many things. He does know. He has an incredible experience. But this is something which is new, which is, it's different. It's a new technology. It's new. Everything in life is trust. David comes to Ziph. They tell him, David, you can trust us. We're going to protect you. In Keilah, they said the same thing. David, trust us. We're going to protect you. The Urim V'Tumim told David twice, these guys are liars. It seems he did, yeah. It seems he did. It seems, do they have a coin with him? This is a very big controversial concept. It says that who says the Urim V'Tumim was only for the Kohen Gadol? One thing we know for sure, that many Anoshim Chashuvim wore an ephod. We hear the word ephod, we right away think one thing only, the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol wore an ephod. What is an ephod? An ephod basically is a vest. It's a vest. What is a vest? It is a garment that primarily covers the back of your body. In fact, someone learned, let's put it aside. Ari Kaplan, he says that the ephod is, he shows different pictures, different opinions of what it was. I think he maybe it was a cape. Like Lahavdil, Elif, Alpha, Abel, Superman, a cape. An ephod is the garment which covers the back of your body. The back of the body, the front is open. And how is it fastened? How did it keep it closed? The ephod. The ephod is what secured it on your body. Ephod covered the back of your body. It comes around, so how do you close it? There are no buttons. Well, in the center you put the choshen. The choshen. It says in the pasuk, V'David hayu lavush ephod bad. David wore an ephod. And what does that mean? He wore a vest? And how did he close it? There were buttons? Maybe. Or maybe it means that anyone who wore an ephod, if you were even more sophisticated, more choshev, you wore on your ephod a choshen. And the choshen, Urim V'Tumim. Was it only the Kohen Gadol? Was there only one choshen with one set of Urim V'Tumim? But we know that the Kohen Meshuach Melchama had an identical set of clothing. And we do know that it says explicitly in the pasuk, in many pasukim in Shmuel, that there were chashuvim who wore an ephod bud. They did not wear the ephod like the Kohen Gadol, that was made from shatnez, of different types of materials that they were not allowed to do, but they wore an ephod. An ephod, you know, there's a lot that we don't know. And did that ephod include with it, Urim V'Tumim, which a holy person, a Navi, was able to communicate with Hashem, ask questions.
When Shaul killed Anokhi HaKohanim, Eviatar was the only left, and he ran to David, the ephod Yarad B'Yado. He brought the ephod from there.
To David.
From Nov to David.
So David said that it was you said that it was the ephod of the Kohen Gadol. You're saying it was the ephod of the Kohen Gadol. Then you have to ask the question. You would think, we would assume that the ephod only was functional if you were the Kohen Gadol. Ephod is something that is supernatural. You ask a question, and letters light up, and you have to scramble the letters to give an answer. You have a question, what should I do? Should I go to location A, location B? And the ephod, you ask the question in front of the Urim V'Tumim, and the letters light up. The names of the Shvatim. And you take those letters and you put it together and you have an answer. Question. Do you need this? Where is the ephod? Where is the choshen when you ask the question? Is it in a box? Is it on the table? So we always assumed that the ephod is being worn at that moment by the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is standing. He's wearing the dal of the eight garments, the big kahuna, including the ephod, and a petitioner. He stands before the Kohen Gadol, whether he's the Melech, whether he's a Navi, whoever he is, and he asks a question. Maybe the Kohen Gadol himself asks the question, and then it lights up. You would assume that if you take the ephod and you would put it on the bima, and you would ask a question, it wouldn't work. The ephod is part of a living person. There's an element of life, an element of life that goes into the ephod to make the ephod functional. Is that really correct? Or maybe not. Maybe, let's say you have an imposter puts on the ephod. Let's say a Yisrael puts on the ephod. Let's say a Levi puts on the ephod. Would it work? So over here, we're saying over that David over here was, it seems, Rashi, these are psukim in Sefer Shmuel, where it's mashma that the ephod was worn not necessarily by the Kohen Gadol, and it was giving him directions. The point we're trying to make over here is that life is all about trust, and you trust. You drive in a car. There's a red light. There's a green light. Why do you go through a green light? Why? Because you trust the person going in the other direction. He has a red light. You trust him. He will stop. You trust him. Economy is built on trust. Why do people borrow? Why do you lend money? The economy needs to operate because people lend money. Why do you lend someone money? Because you trust that the person who borrows the money will pay you back. Everything in life ultimately comes down to emunah. You trust people. They show these, I once saw a video of actors, people who do stunts, or even people in the circus, or even dancers, when they do different moves, they basically fall. They move backwards, and if no one is there to catch them or to participate, they're dead. They're dead. They're literally dead. And the hardest thing when these entertainers or stuntmen or people who work in this business, when they're trained, the hardest thing is to have trust in your fellow, your partner, that when you jump off the cliff, he's going to be there to catch you. Because if he's not there to catch you, you're dead. It's suicide. Do you really trust your partner? There are certain sophisticated moves in dancing. And same thing, exactly. Exactly. A person, a soldier has to advance. He only can advance if he has faith that he'll get cover from his another soldier, this trust. You coordinate. I'm going to go and I'm going to jump at this moment only because I trust you're going to be there to catch me. You coordinate. And those are extreme examples. But everything in life is based upon trust. And when the day comes and you discover that you have been betrayed, there's nothing worse than that. That's the pits. When you put your faith in someone and you later discover that they were fooling you all along, there's no greater feeling of anger, frustration, and yearning for justice when you discover you've been taken for a fool and you trusted in someone and they never ever had intent to be there for you. And that's exactly what happens to David multiple times in his life, especially in this story where David is being told again and again, go here, go there. God HaChayza tells him, go here. And then what happens? It's a booby trap. How could that be? God HaChayza, God's my best friend. God would not, he's my prophet, he's my rabbi. He wouldn't betray me. It's an Nisoyim. It's an Nisoyim to David. And then when he comes to these people of Ki'ilah, they say, we'll take care of you. And they betrayed him. And then he goes to Ziph, we'll take care of you. He's betrayed. And then you have the Urim Yitumin. Who do you trust? Maybe Hashem's out to get him. Maybe the Urim Yitumin is out to get him. Who in life do you trust? David here is trusting, the Urim Yitumin. He's trusting God HaChayze. He's trusting the Ze'ifim. And trusting the Anshei Ki'ilah. There are four people that we learn in this Malbim who David is putting his faith in. And two of the times, and it's an assignment. And when you have faith in something, what happens? Where do you end up at the end of the day? And how do you deal with who you have faith in? This is the nisayon of life, and this mizmar is to a degree an expression of David thanking Hashem that you I can trust. Everyone else around me, you don't really know. You don't really know friend from foe. Life is not so simple. Okay, so that's the basic background. So this is the story of David in the beginning of his malchus. We're going back in time. When David was young, he was running away from Shaul, and he was in the desert because they wanted to kill him. In the Mitzudos, in a fortress they built in the desert, he was visited by God HaChozeh, who told him the time has come to return. And when he returned, he found himself in Ke'ilah, and there he was betrayed. He then went to Ziph, he was betrayed, and he then was in contact, was being pursued by Shaul, and narrowly escaped with his life. Every step of the way, David found himself in danger, and yet he survived. And for that, David composes this mizmah. Okay, that's the basic Hakdama.
Part of what he composed is also how pitiful the Nadim with the Ben Adam Shein Lo Sishuva. That's the story of his life.
Okay, Lamatzech mizmah l'doi pasuk aleph, b'chuch Hashem, l'am rung d'psum reikud, b'chuch Hashem, chasisi, in you Hashem I put my faith. Al evosho l'oilam, do not allow me to be embarrassed forever. Mitzvkoscha, in your righteousness, palteini, bring about my escape. Mitzudois David. On the next page 265. It's therefore fitting, because I put my faith in you. That alone, this is a very powerful concept. Just putting your faith in Hashem, that alone is a cause of salvation. Lazeh, just for this, it's sufficient. I should not be put to shame. The av she'ein bizuchus, even though I have no merit, hatzileini b'tzidkoscha, save me in your righteousness. Putting faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be enough in order to achieve salvation. There's a very big machloikis in the concept of emuna. Let's discuss this is a very interesting concept. In emuna, what exactly is emuna? There's a very famous chazonish. And it's very controversial, the Chazon Ish says. It's so controversial that there are those who say the Chazon Ish never wrote it. In fact, what he wrote, I once read this fascinating article, when he wrote his manuscript on Emuna Ubitochen, there's a very famous kuntres from the Chazon Ish, Emuna Ubitochen, and he says something there very controversial. And there are those who claim that when he wrote this section that I'm about to tell you, he wrote it as a way of telling you what the concept is and then rejecting it. And the printer somehow manipulated it or made a mistake and thought this is what he meant to say. And what is it? He basically says that if you have emuna in Hashem, person Rachmano Litzlan is in an eighth tzar. Emuna means have faith in Hashem that whatever is meant to be will happen, and you basically you accept. The ultimate emunah is to accept the inevitable. Your emunah cannot in any way whatsoever change what will happen. You can dive into Hashem, you can pray to Hashem for a different outcome. That's tefillah. You can pray to Hashem. Prayer is one thing. You dive into Hashem, I don't want this outcome, I want this person to live. Oh, but he's in a coma, and the chance of him living are almost 0%. Well, Hashem, you can do miracles. So I pray to you that he should live. Okay, that's prayer. Then there's emunah. Emunah is, put aside prayer, emunah is, I have full faith in Hashem that whatever is happening and will happen, it's your desire that this should happen. It's under your control. And I accept. Basically, it's an acceptance that whatever happens in this world is the will of Hashem. That's what the Chazon Ish says. That's what he says. There are other Rishonim that disagree. And they hold that the more emunah a person has, the emunah itself changes the outcome. Emunah, to a certain degree, is even more powerful than prayer. Prayer, you have to ask. If you don't ask, you don't get. In fundraising, if you take a course in fundraising 101, there's some excellent online resources to teach you how to be a professional collector. And the first rule of collecting money is, if you don't ask, you don't get. If you put the most beautiful advertisement in a newspaper describing what an organization does, guess what? No one, not even one person, will send in a check for $5. You can demonstrate, look what we do. You have to follow up and come to a person and say, please give us a donation. Please give us. And soften them up with demonstrating what the organization does. But you're not going to get one penny unless you make that phone call and you make a direct request. If you don't ask, you don't get. People who begin a career fundraising are very naive, and they think you just have to, show what you do, and checks come in the mail. People, in the goodness of their heart, they send in money. It doesn't work like that. Well, that's tefillah. Tefillah also. If you don't ask, you don't get. That's how tefillah is. If you don't ask, Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Hashan Hazaz, tefillah is you ask. You make that request. There are big Baal of Musa who say that emunah is a koyach. Even without asking, you get. And the more emunah you have, the more it actually changes the outcome. It changes. I have emunah, new Hashem. I have full belief in Hashem. I really believe you can make this person get better, even though he's almost dead. No, I have emunah. I believe in your power. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Kol Yochel, and my emunah in you is so complete, I really believe you can make him get better. The emunah itself changes the reality, changes the outcome, without making a request. It's a different form of communication. It's a very fine point. Okay, that's another whole thing. That's the chazanish. There's a concept. There's a concept, then there's a practicality. So the chazanish, they're different opinions. Chazanish says that emunah represents the concept, and the bitachon means the practical outcome. If you really believe, then don't work on Shabbos. Do you believe God created this world? Do you believe that Hashem made this world and Hashem gave us the Torah? Hashem told us, made a statement, don't work on Shabbos. I really believe that. So why then are you working on Shabbos? Well, I just want to work on Shabbos. A fellow may have emunah, but he has no bitachon. You get a PhD in fully comprehending the principles, but if he does not put the principles into action, that means he has no bitochoy. Bitochoy is the practical outgrowth of one's emun. Emun is the concept, and bitochoy is the application. And of course, there are two sides of one coin. But that's a side point.
The point of Mary Kaplan talked about tefillah. One of the things that he said is that God doesn't necessarily need your tefillah. Obviously,
it's for us.
He's great. He wants to see what you're willing to do for yourself. What are you willing to do? In other words, you feel that you want to pray. I mean, what are you doing? Now you're asking me, talk to me. I want to see how much does it mean to you. If you don't ask, like you just said, if you don't ask,
you don't get. And what is emunah? Emunah just means, according to the Chazanish, emunah is not a mechanism. It's not a technique to get. It's a way to accept. In life, you have to accept the reality. Things are not always so pleasant. And emunah is an acknowledgement that this is Hashem's desire. I made many requests. I daven every day. This is what I want. This is what I feel is the right thing. Hashem said no. And Hashem is not out to get me. I have emunah. that this is the way it's supposed to be. That emun is not going to change anything. It's not, the more a person comes to acknowledge the reality that it's Hashem's world, and this is the way it's going to be, and there's nothing I can do about it. I fully accept, I don't understand, but I fully accept, that is emunah. That emunah is not going to change anything. You want change? You can try. Ein mazel l'Yisrael. You can daven. Davening is davening. Emunah is a concept of acceptance. This is what the Chazon Ish writes in Emunah Betochah. Other Bali Musa, they strongly disagree. They hold that emunah itself, it's a clear departure from the Chazon Ish. There's no way to be miyashe there. It's a very fundamental disagreement in basic the fundamentals of Yadus. Others say no. Just believe, have faith, it's going to be good. Have emunah in Hashem. Hashem put me into this world. Hashem did not put me into this world to torture me. Hashem can torture me if he wants. But Hashem, there's more tzimtzum in this concept. Hashem put me into this world the way I am, in my understanding, this person should live. And therefore, I'm right. He should live. And I daven to you, Hashem, that he should live. That's one technique. And there's another technique. I really believe he's going to live. I really believe that Hashem is going to make it because he should live. Why shouldn't he live? That if in the world, the way we live, living is a good thing. Hashem did not put you into the world to torture you. He should live, and that's the right thing. I really believe that Hashem will make him live. The more you believe in Hashem and he will live, and that Hashem has the power to make him live, the emunah itself is a technique which brings about change in this world. Again, the Chazon Ish says it doesn't. Emunah is an acceptance of the reality. Change is tefillah. Other Balei Musar have the names. I have a very good safe on this. All the names of the people, the whole lineup of all the different opinions is no. Davening is one approach when you make a request. And emunah is even without a request. Just be positive. Be positive in Hashem's power, what he could do, or what should be. And that itself will itself bring about a positive result. Okay, the world is full of negativity, so you know, it's a very hard thing. The Chazon Ish is a very practical approach. In my worthless opinion, the Chazon Ish's approach is a very realistic, pragmatic view of this world. The other approach is that the emunah itself brings change is not for the faint of heart, because the person will get a lot of heartache if he tries to live in a world that is really that's needs to be at a very high level. But this is a principle. The reason why this is very, very striking is because David is bringing us support. The way at least the Mitzudas David is presenting it is not like the Chazon Ish. The Mitzudas David of the year on this pasuk says, "Bal Eivos Lamatzech Becho Hashem Chosisi." In you, Hashem, I have faith. The word Chosisi is a hard word to translate. I don't know. Let's see. What does it say over here? They don't really have looking for a good translation. What?
It's a
cover. I seek refuge. I seek shelter. It's a way of saying I have faith. I put myself in your tent. Mm-hmm. I'm in your team. So look what he says over here. Mitzudas David. Al evoshal li'olam. Now, if not for the Mitzudas David, I would translate the words. It's a request. Hashem, I have faith in you. I therefore make a request. Please do not allow me to be embarrassed. That's how I always understood this. I ask you a favor. Please do not put me to shame. Hashem may say no. And if Hashem says no, well, I have emunah, okay? I understand that sometimes Hashem says no. That's not what the Mitzvah David says. The Mitzvah David says, it is because I have faith in you That is what will guarantee that I will not be put to shame. The emunah itself brings results. Alev osha lozeh, therefore, mehoroi. It's therefore fitting. The faith itself is what brings about the results. This is heavy stuff. The Chazon Ish doesn't say this. The Chazon Ish doesn't go with this approach. You want to go nuance it and tell me that really the Chazon Ish has different applications? I don't know. That's not so simple. Okay, that's not so simple. But the Yitzchus David is very clear. Okay, it's very clear. He's saying a very lofty concept. Having faith in Hashem, therefore, that's what brings results. That's what brings results.
That's what he says in Pasuk Vav.
What?
In Pasuk Vav, he said, "Biadcha afkid ruchi, whatever you want to do, but I know Hashem el emet, emunah ve'emet." But it's
you want to say the other approach?
You understand? I know that you'll do the right thing. Because you
so that sounds more like the Chazon Ish.
Yeah.
So you want to see the dove is playing both sides of the fence. He's taking both sides. It has to be, but how do you nuance it? When in life you take the approach, the emunah itself brings results, and on the other hand, no. Emunah means acceptance. It is a therapy of acceptance.
Could they do in the Holocaust?
Well, when you read stories of the Holocaust, there are people that are very powerful. Just be positive, it's going to be good. We're going to survive. We're going to survive. Have emunah b'Hashem, we're going to survive. And they survived. And there are people, have emunah b'Hashem, we're going to survive, and they didn't survive. You want to go and divide it, that there are different applications. What are the rules? No one can explain this type of stuff. These concepts are way too abstract, and life is way too complicated, and you can never generalize in these concepts. But on a very raw, like when you want to just put it as raw, black and white, these are very different concepts. A concept of having emunah, that is what brings results. As a shmo, emunah means you do. So what does that mean? The shleima. It's a very, it's also very.
Right. What is
you know, it's a kind of it's a takeoff on the modern world that your sickness is caused by your mental state.
You identify with.
It's kind of cruel, you know. A person's already suffering, and then they're telling you, you know, because you don't have enough faith, that's why you're suffering.
They blame you.
You know.
Yeah, all this crazy fantasy world of reality. Guy walks into a store and says he's doing some controversial event, and he's taking his cameras out. Sir, please turn off your camera. No recording here. So the guy says, I identify as the camera. Therefore, you can't tell me that I am a camera. If I'm allowed to be in this room and I identify as a camera, I can't grasp what.
It was a television show in the early 50s, I am a camera.
I think they have arrived from the Luchadoti. The boy Bishon Materis Bala, Gam, the simple seller, Toch Emune Am Sibula. So we see that the color of Shabbat comes because we are faithful.
Toch Emune
Am Sibula.
I don't know, because.
Because we have a Muna that she'll come.
No, she comes. No, she's coming into a congregation of people who are Maminim.
I heard that a lot of rebbes, their koyach comes from their chassidim because they believe.
Right.
So I think isn't this the same thing? Toch amune absolut, because we have faith in you, that's why you come.
This is very Kabbalistic. This is a principle chassidim, and there was one rebbe. I'm not going to tell you any names.
Mostly they come for the soul.
We are Hashem Amin Man. God has faith in us.
There was once a rabbi that was a little bit controversial. I'm not going to tell you who it is. Don't try to guess. When you tell someone don't, it means they. But so there was another very great person. He was very critical of this rabbi. He held him to be Yechutz L'machem. So they said, how could you push him away? He's a Baal Mitzvah. And no one's coming, there's no one that will deny the miracles that this person did. He did incredible miracles. How could he not be a believer? The facts speak for itself. So he said something that was very, 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 and he said, if you take a piece of wood, this is a piece of wood, and you take 1,000 people, and you brainwash them, that this piece of wood is a god. This piece of wood will do miracles. This piece of wood will do things that defy nature. What? He says, yeah, that's the way Hashem made this world. The koyach, and that's really what the Chazanish doesn't say. This is really the other approach. The koyach as emuna. It's we don't appreciate. We think, you know, trust the science, and you know people, wow, we don't trust the science. It goes against the grain. But Hashem put into this world a koyach of emuna. The koyach of emuna is so powerful, it actually creates a life that defies the laws of nature. That's a very dangerous statement, I just said.
Right.
And I think in context, what it means is that the other person really is very holy. I'm trying to interpret this, maybe I'm saying this, the other person is really, really very holy. But there are elements that are troubling, And this person is entitled to his opinion, and he holds that these elements that are troubling is enough, is a problem, a very significant problem, it's a very great danger. So therefore, I don't want to go down that path. But there are many people that do want to go down that path. And because that person really is very holy, they become his chassidim. And they really, really believe in him. And that belief attaches itself to the holiness, which indeed gives that person the ability to do incredible, incredible things. Look.
So is that good or bad?
It's very good if the person is truly very holy. But when there are elements in the person that are dangerous, hey, let's put this aside. Go back to the old rabbis. Let's go back to the rabbis from 300 years ago. You read the books, right? You read these books. The rabbis did these wild, outrageous things. They did miracles. You hear stories, right? Take out all these old books. Go back 300, 400 years ago. How do they do miracles? You know why? They had real chassidim. These rabbis, no one ever challenged their authenticity. No one ever, go back 300 years ago, some of these holy rabbis, they were tzaddikim beyond belief. No one ever. So there are many tzaddikim. Walk down the street, you'll find there are many tzaddikim who are Yirei Shamayim. They can't do for you a miracle. Ask them, can you do for me a miracle? Can you go split?
They don't know themselves.
Can you do? No, even they know. They know people. The answer is, you know why they can't do a miracle? Because no one has faith in them. A person that is appointed by a tzibur, and the tzibur has emuna, it creates a dynamic. They're holy people, and people believe. This is the basic principle of Chassidus 101. Chassidus 101 is, what type do you see rebbes? Not today, not really. Because today, you know what? I'll tell you something very nasty. The reason why today you don't have rebbes that can do miracles, here are the two reasons. Number one, the rebbes today, not all of them are on a level of sanctity that is necessary. And number two, guess what? The Chassidim don't really believe in their rebbes. They don't believe in their rebbes. The rebbes are just a figurehead. They're just a figurehead. They're a figurehead in society. You need to dance around someone. You need to create a society where you have a person that you know is in charge, who's the boss. You need a political system. Unfortunately, today many rebbes are really more politicians. And it's good. I'm not chashon. They're tzaddikim. They're holy people. They're good people. The Yirei Shamayim. But they're not on the level we can appreciate. And the chassidim know that. And because they know that, they don't really... They don't really believe in them. If the Rebbe will call him up in the middle of the night and say, I want you to go right now to the Washington Bridge and jump. Say, Rebbe, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Can we do this? 12 o'clock. You're not going to do it. Why are you not going to do it? Because you don't believe. If you don't believe, then the Rebbe does have koyach. The koyach of the Rebbe is only as great as the koyach of emunah that the chassidim have for the Rebbe. This is a principle of chassidus. Litvaks don't like this stuff. They don't go for this stuff.
Yeah, what you're talking about is the days when they had the Kabbalah.
No Mikubalim.
Yeah, I mean, because the Rebbe, like we see today, only existed from the early 1800s.
No Mikubalim. There were Rebbes that had no shaykhs to Kabbalah. They were just holy, holy people. And they were Mikubalim, and their koyach is because if there need two conditions. A person needs to be a very holy person, beyond the shadow of a doubt. But you know, there are many people that are very holy people. There are many people. Many tzaddikim that no one even knows about. Hashem knows about them. But the prerequisite is a person has to be the real deal. Number two, followers, chassidim, who have emunah. That emunah creates a reality that defies the laws of nature.
Yeah, it's true.
That's the principle of chassidus. It's built upon this principle.
I understand, but I mean, I was reading it as I didn't know. I was looking up an early relative of mine, way back on my mother's side, and it's the two columns that I had in the Sefer about it. He lived in the late 1600s to early 1700s, and it said he had a reputation, and when there was a fire in his town, he could put out the fire by just saying something. And then the town burnt down, and they locked him up because they accused him of waiting to see how big of a fire he could put out before he would make his, and they put him in jail. He was in jail for a few months, and then they apologized and let him out, and he apologized, and they asked him to stay on as a rabbi, and he said, thank you, but I'm leaving. I mean, that was in the, I mean, I had no idea, but I read it about it when I found out. So I looked them up, and there it was. They had a big...
Okay, this whole idea that I'm telling you about, that Rebbes, is basically taking the basic concept of Emunah by Hashem and bringing it down to people, which is a very dangerous thing. And today, the 21st century, it's over. Okay, you don't hear this today in the 21st century, but yet by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is a very big machlokes in Bali Musa. When it comes to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Yesod is, is Emunah a Hashkafic principle of acceptance? Acceptance of the reality. Or is Emunah a principle by which a person can bring change similar to tefillah? Tefillah, the goal of tefillah, there are many goals in tefillah, but one of the elements of tefillah, beyond the shadow of a doubt, is a request to bring about a change of the status quo. Is emunah b'Hashem a tool to bring about a change in the status quo, or is that an abuse of what emunah is? Emunah is purely a principle of acceptance. So Machloikis, the Chazon Ish, is world famous for understanding that emunah is not a tool to bring a change in status quo. There are many Bali Musa that strongly disagree with the Chazon Ish. Be positive, and it will be good. Being positive is a tool that brings change, similar to tefillah. David here, in this pasuk, is endorsing the second opinion, not the Chazon Ish's opinion. Because he learns the words al evoishol le'olam is not a tefillah. Rather, it is a consequence of emunah. Becho Hashem chosisi. It is because I have faith in you that itself brings about a result that is a guarantee al evoishol le'olam. And not because of my merit, only because of my faith. And therefore, b'tzidkoscha palteni, I am deserving to be saved, to be a polit, to be rescued, only in your merit, only due to your righteousness, not because I've done anything other than have faith in you. Faith itself is a tool that brings about change in status quo. It brings salvation. Next pasuk. It could be that David elsewhere says the other approach of the Chazon Ish, and someone who's very brilliant will somehow be able to explain how Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that there are times when emunah is a principle of acceptance of the reality, and there are times, Heshi, welcome back, and there are times when emunah is a tool that brings about change. Next pasuk gimel. Pasuk says David, pasuk says hatei hatei elai oz necha, tilt. Okay, it's a very interesting concept of hatei. By Hashem, sometimes they ask Hashem to listen, and sometimes they ask Hashem to bend his ear. What's the difference? What's the difference between saying to Hashem, listen, versus saying to Hashem, tilt your ear? One is of a more intense form of, like, you know, there's like hearken. In English, they say hearken. Shema Yisrael. What does it mean? Listen? No one's going to translate the word Shema, listen. Hearken. In English, what's the difference between hearken and listen? Listen is like, you know, you're on the train, and as you're reading your newspaper, you hear, stand clear of the closing doors. Okay? The words are going into your brain, but that's not so important now.
It's comprehension, no?
Hearken is stop everything that you're doing. Whatever you're doing, stop. Close the books. Stop your conversation.
The way English language is, to hear is just to hear anything. Listening means obeying what it says.
Oh, obey, action.
Yeah,
so you said another idea.
My mother always used to say to me, I know you heard me, but you're not listening.
Oh, so you're saying, so you're saying to hear and to, you're differentiating in English between to hear and to listen. Okay, so you're saying another difference is one is just to absorb the information well, and the other is it's an instructions, a command. Listen so you know what to do now. And then there is just no comprehension. Hearken, then it's just, you know, you just pick up what's being said in the room. It's not necessarily something which has a lot of depth. So over here in the Mitzuda stuff, it says, Hatei Eli Lishmaya Tefilasi. Okay, listen to, he just says it very simply. Okay, the Mitzuda should listen. What does it say? Aznecha, let's go back to Pasuk Gimel. Hatei Eli Aznecha, Mehera, quickly. Now, is the word Mehera part of the previous expression, part of the next expression? The old of the Tamei HaMikra, you have to know the Tamei HaMikra of MS. MS, Aleph, Mem, Tov. Aleph is Iyov, Mem is Mishlei, and Sof is Tilim. Tilim. The Tamei HaMikra of these three Sefarim, of Sifrei, MS, are not the same as the Tamei HaMikra of the rest of Tanakh. The rest of Tanakh were very comfortable knowing when it's the end of a sentence, and when it's in the middle of a sentence or the beginning of a sentence. In Tehillim, it's very confusing because you have to know the rules of the Tanya HaMikra. The Tanya HaMikra are completely different, and I don't know the rules, but here it's HaTeilai Aznecha, Mehera HaTzileni, quickly save me. Do you put the word Mehera HaTzileni with the word HaTzileni, or do you say HaTeilai Aznecha Mehera? I don't think so. I think it's Mehera HaTzileni, save me quickly, Hayeli be for me litzur ma'oz. Ma'oz. Yeshua, see. Again, you have this very common, these two words that go together. Be for me a rock of a ma'oz.
Is that an esnachta under the Mehera?
That's not an esnachta. It's upside down esnachta. That is what a unique that? Symbol that only appears in the Tamei HaMikra of Sifrei MS. That does not appear anywhere in Tanakh, in Chumash.
So what's its purpose?
It's a special melody. A special melody. There are three sefarim which have their own melody. When you lay on Shabbat, you have the melody of the Torah. You have the melody of the Haftarah. You have the melody of Eicha. The melody of Megillas Esther. The melody of the Megillos. The other Megillos that you lay on the Sholosh Regalim. That's already five. Shira Shirim Kolos and Rus. And it's cited in some of the commentators that we lost the melodies. It used to be that it was a different melody for Shira Shirim, a different melody for Rus, and a different melody for Koheles. We lost the art, and we just merge all three, Koheles, Shir Hashirim, and Rus, into one melody. Shir Hashirim, Asher Lishloimoi, Yishokeini, Minashikoi, it's a different melody. Haftorah, Baruch, Ato, Hashem. Okay, everyone knows that in the Torah, we have its own melody. And for Eicha, Eicha Yashva Badahad. When do you learn Eicha? We once mentioned this. Is Simchas Torah. Eicha. How do you start Simchas Torah?
No, you're thinking of
Shavuos Akdamos. That's the Rishus. But I'm talking about the kibudim. Ato horeso lo das ki Hashem hu Elokim eicha yoshva bodod hoir rabosiyam. Same exact thing. Ato horeso is the nigun of eicha. The only difference is the sof pasuk. In eicha you say eicha yoshva bodod hoir rabosiyam hoiso. Koal mono, ato hore solodas ki Hashem hu Elokim. Einoi milvadoi. The only difference is how you end off. But the beginning of the structure of the sentence is identical to Eicha. What in the world are you singing Eicha on the night of Simchas Torah? What are you doing? We had this discussion. What are you singing Eicha? It's not so simple. Not so simple why we sing Ato Horeso in the melody of Eicha on the night of, or say just the opposite. On Tisha B'Av. It's not a sad melody. We're bringing in Simchas Torah. What is the Haftarah? The Haftarah is Almo of the Horeis. Why was the land destroyed? Al ozlu es toirasi. Because you abandoned, they asked this question to the Nevi'im, they didn't know. They asked to the Malachim, they didn't know. They asked to everyone, no one knew why. Why was there a Churban? And Hashem says, I'll tell you why there was a Churban. Al asher ozlu es toirasi. Therefore, the whole day is a day, remember Simchas Torah. Sing Eicha. Don't say it in a sad tone. It's a happy tone. It's the tone of Ato Hore Solodas. All the children are running around with their pekloch. Right? It's a happy day, Simchas Torah. Think about Simchas Torah. There's a lot of chokhmah there. What exactly is going on? You can say Azoy and Azoy, you could darshan, but you can't deny that Ato Horesa and Eicha are the same melody. What's going on? Okay, in any event, there are different melodies. So here we're going to get sidetracked. Is that when it comes to the sif? What?
These words.
Monday, Thursday.
So, David Amunah says it. But how can I say it? Who am I?
You're David. You're entitled. Absolutely. Every person. The chashivas of man, every David, that's exactly the purpose of Tehillim. That David is empowering every Jew to be him. That's exactly what David did by writing Tehillim. By David writing Tehillim, he's giving over to Klal Yisrael, you be me. You stand in my shoes. Kol Yisrael, b'nei melochim ninu. The whole Klal Yisrael is a ben melech. Kol kavuda bas melech penima. Every woman is a princess. The David, when he wrote Tehillim, he wrote it for Klal Yisrael. You use this. This is your tool. You are Malchus. Every person has an entitlement to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu exactly the way that I speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, let's finish up a little bit. Hatei, back to the mitzvah this stuff, and this was the pasuk gimel. L'shmoya tefilasi l'tzur doyme l'sel l'chazak. Hashem, you're similar to a rock. We say this at the end of Shimon Esher, Hashem Tzuri v'goyali. You are my rock. By the goyim, it's a very popular expression. He's my rock. What does that mean? It comes from Tehillim. Hashem Tzuri v'goyali. Hashem is my rock. My strength. He's my strength. So rock is something that's always been around. It doesn't go away. Everything that has life to it, a tzemeach, a chai, medaber, their time comes. They disappear from the face of the earth. But the rocks, they don't go nowhere. They're always here. They span time. The Ribbono Shel Olam in this dimension is like a rock. Hashem was here in the beginning. Hashem is here at the end. Hashem Melech, Hashem Molech, Hashem Yimloch, Li'olam Voed. We want to find a metaphor in this world for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You see all over Chazal. Chazal are very desperate. In Tanakh, they're very desperate to find objects of Gashmias to use as a mashal to us to understand, to relate to spirituality. There is really no way we can relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to find something in this world and use it as a dogma in order to relate to the world of spirituality. What do you have in this world that you can use as a mashal for Hashem? A rock! You know why? Because you pick up a blade of grass, it's not going to be around tomorrow. You take a blade of grass out of the earth, oh, look how nice, how beautiful, it's green, it's fresh, it's moist, incredible. Put it on the table, come back tomorrow, it's not so nice anymore. Come back in a week, it's dead, it's come back later, it's dust. Come back later, it's gone. So you're going to go tell me that you're going to compare Hashem to a blade of grass? Doesn't work like that. You need to find a metaphor. A rock. The rock is the same rock. It doesn't change. Not now, not tomorrow, never. The rock, we all know, the rock has been around from the time of Ma'aseh Bereishis. So we need to use the rock as a metaphor for Hashem. Hashem, you don't go anywhere. You were here in the beginning. You're here at the end. You span everything. It is a metaphor for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Very similar. Hashem, Hashem Tsuri V'Goali. Hashem, you are my rock. Okay, you'll tell me Hashem is strong. You know, rock is not so strong, by the way. Every rock has a breaking point. You take a good hammer, you give a zetz, you break it. You take a drill, you go, and you can dig into it, you can go, and you can drill into bedrock. You can go all the way down. Okay? You can go all the way down. Every rock has a breaking point. So you want to go say, Hashem, you're strong, you're chazak. Okay, I mean, to a degree, stronger than man. But the most basic metaphor of a rock is zaman, time. Hashem is timeless. Just like in this world, the domain is timeless. Hashem, that's a very basic principle of an Hashem. Over here it says, you are my stronghold. Litzur ma'oz, you are a rock ma'oz. That is a stronghold. Lebeis mitzudois lehoshieni, a home that is a fortress to bring about my salvation. Pasuk Gimel mitzudois David. We did this already. Lebeis mitzudois vehu mivtzor chazak, a stronghold. What does Rashi say? Okay. What Rashi over here says? What he just says? He's not here on the call to go give us some guidance on this word. All right. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow meeting will continue. Or
upside down is not to have any significance.
It does have significance, but I don't know what it means. I don't know the Tanei Hanikra of MS. I don't know anything about the Tanei Hanikra of MS. I don't know. There are three Sephardim in Tanakh that have their own set of musical notes. Iyov, Mishlei, and Tehillim. Aleph is Iyov, Mem is Mishlei, Sof is Tehillim. These three Sephardim have their own musical notes. And they have their own set of rules. And I don't know anything about it. All of our
homes. Batim.
Where?
In Eretz Israel.
Well, obviously.
They from the Sur of Eretz Israel.
Where else?
As opposed to Eitzim, as opposed to whatever.
In America, did you notice that in America?
Not every home is
in America, the streets are all concrete and the buildings are brick. In Eretz Yisrael, the streets are all brick and the buildings are all concrete.
I don't know the joke, but that's not
There's no joke. No. There's not no joke. That's just the reality.
Really?
Think about it. Yeah, all the streets are brick. Beis Shemesh.
Some of the old streets are cobblestone.
Right, cobblestone, bricks.
All like
they're all brick. Cars. Brick. In Beis Shemesh, all of the sidewalks are all bricks. Every brick, the bricks are laid. And all the buildings are all concrete. Where? Beit Shemesh, the buildings are not brick buildings.
No.
They're concrete buildings. They're not stone, concrete.
Yeah, where's the concrete?
Sand.
The mountain, next mountain.
Fine.
They're grinding up the mountain.
That's what there's all this dust. Wherever you go, there's dust in the concrete. And what are the streets? They put bricks. Bricks. All the streets are bricks.
Doesn't have brick stones.
I don't know Beit Shemesh. The Beit Shemesh. In America, it's just the opposite. You go down the street, all the buildings are brick, and I think the problem is just to turn everything sideways. I guess it's all okay. I think in America, we have to just turn everything sideways.
She passed away last night. She was 95 years old. She was really healthy. She was really good. She was
really good.
About a week ago is when they wrote on the hospital.
To my center. So where is she now?
I don't know. It's somewhere, I guess, in Britain.
We'll get to find out.
Might be a great site for you. So let's see. I don't know if I'm out here.
I'm Mordecai and Mordecai B.
She's here. Jack Robbins.
Hope everything's okay.
One of the cemeteries over here. One of those cemeteries is Jack Robinson.
Yeah.
And that's where they have
time. Do you have
a room? I'm not sure which one. One of the cemeteries is Jack Robinson. I mean, Jack Robinson, I don't know which one.
Who?
My brother-in-law's mother passed away.
When?
Last night.
Brother-in-law's mother. They were waiting, but your brother-in-law lived.
Yeah.
So where's the Levi? Where's the Levi?
It's going to be tomorrow. I don't know if
you're going tomorrow?
Yeah.
What time?
He left in the afternoon. It might be in the afternoon. I don't know.
Just look up the biography in case I can say
it.
You know what I noticed with him? He speaks like this.
I'm mortified.
You
know,
he always
stays
like this when he speaks. And I see why. Because he's got a mid-mix part of his hand. He's looking at it, but notice. So that's the way he's speaking.
Oh, everything's okay.
He stays like this. He's doing
okay,
his
very
best.
Good.
Father Yaakov Green Sunday. Also the man of his 90s. Can you imagine? They were all saying at the funeral what kind of speaker people met him. They have nothing, no report. He refused to let himself at any point. And then we hear a bigger show. He was asking a court thing about it from them.
Yeah.
Basically, when he moved from one place to the other, he took all the speeches. He said, no one cares what I have to say. What a terrible. But it doesn't matter. He
would have
made it safer.
I
like reading good people.
It's
very sad.
Yeah,
people take away their own memories. He took away his own memory. His own legacy.
People believe that Odessa is a very friendly Odessa, which one really don't. So at one point we were giving loose shoes in Panovich. One of the boys is here, one of the boys. That's what people say.
report. Okay, fine. And the board here kind of the board here is this is a Polish Zach. This is the Sahara, this is the internet. This is Mama Schmack. You do this, like where the card. We his father is convincing that the state reporting business is a Mama Schmack, the internet.
All right, let's learn. Heshi Klein. I see you here, Heshi. Where are you, Heshi? What part of the world are you you're coming in from?
I just did it as a... I hate. That's what I didn't say. Stop saying what I didn't say.
I said in the sixth grade there. That's
Mayor, what's up, Tamari?
I went to the Rabbi Levine, I'm in Lakewood.
You're in Lakewood. You moved already? You there?
Yes.
That's it? You're gone? That's it? You don't come back to Flavish anymore? Where in Lakewood are you? Where in
any religious Jews there?
Fairway is a 55 year old community.
Are any religious
You're not 55, you're only like 49.
Hey, right. Plus a couple of years.
You could be religious Catholic.
Probably they let you go because your wife is under 55. So no, and because your wife is that's they let the husbands also go.
Ask if there's a senior center.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Okay, Rabbi, so let's learn for a few minutes. Let's learn Parshas Shalach. I want to discuss today for a few minutes a sugya we've done many times, the sugya of Techeles. Does anyone here wear Techeles?